You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer, joined today by Theo Squires. How are you, Theo?
A bit tired after a long one yesterday, but feeling a lot better for a Liverpool win.
And you travelled down to Fulham with Ian Doyle. How are we, Ian?
Okay.
No big pauses on the pod, Ian. They could turn off.
But it took 6 minutes before we got into the pod last time. You were chuddering on about all random nature of nonsense.
Yeah, well, sometimes I got told off for that recently on a pod. I'll try to keep the nonsense to a premium. Before we do start, thanks very much to our sponsors, NordVPN. I fully recommend going and checking them out to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan. Go to nordvpn.com/bloodred and our link gets you 4 months free. 4 months extra on a 2-year plan, and there's no risk at all with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast description box. Sorry, we are audio only today. Ian Kroll, what's he called? Our producer is off.
He's still celebrating and having some win.
Yeah, and also his son's first birthday. So he's off doing that, and we'll be back later this week. So we will be back on YouTube to YouTube listeners on Friday for sure.
YouTube viewers, surely.
YouTube viewers, yeah. They listen. And
you wouldn't see you're a listener. Yeah, anyway.
But before we go on, really quickly, another plug for our Klopp standalone. Doyle, you contributed to it, so would you like to give it a quick plug?
Yes, it's 64 pages of the finest words and pictures by people from the Liverpool Echo, myself and Paul Gorst, and lovingly crafted and put together by Nicholas Smith of on our print desk. Basically, it's just looking back at the 9 years that Klopp's been in charge, looking at his best moments, his indifferent moments, his best signings, you know, the kind of thing to read. And it's a good little memento. Well, not little, actually. It's 64 pages, as I say. It's quite weighty. Memento of a very memorable time in Liverpool's history. So get your Klopp special. Yeah, £4.99.
We'll put the link in the podcast description box. It ships worldwide. So if you listen to that, listen to this anywhere in the world, then... yeah, you can get yourself a copy, so please do.
Did you see that viral Klopp challenge that was going on Twitter the other day? How he looked 9 years ago to how he looks now, and everyone joining in.
He's aged 9 years.
It's incredible. He's aged all of us have 9 years. Yeah. All of us have aged 9 years in the last 9 years.
When you've got a pandemic in the middle of it, there's some big differences there. I have not aged well in 9 years.
Yeah, well,
we didn't really want to say that to
you. Yeah. Well, we got absolutely tons to get through, because I did think we were going to talk about just a game, but
hurry up.
It's been added to, so let's get on to it. Let's just start with a little bit of news from David Ornstein of The Athletic, talking about Ruben Amorim's future. Amorim, of course, one of the front runners for the Liverpool job. Mr. Ornstein reporting that West Ham are massively interested. Poor David Moyes. Doesn't matter what he does at West Ham. He always gets the sack, doesn't he? But West Ham massively interested in a line in there saying that Amorim is unlikely to be the front runner for the Liverpool job, which I think has probably caught a lot of people by surprise. These sorts of things gather a lot of momentum, don't they? And Amorim had gathered a great deal of momentum as being potentially the front runner for the Liverpool job. But I'd suggest, Doyle, it's possibly all part of the plan.
Well, I'd say that those who those who regularly log into the Orn Hub, as we call it, they will be a little bit surprised by that. I think what we have to bear in mind, it was only 2 weeks ago, in fact, less than 2 weeks ago, that was the suggestion that Liverpool had agreed a deal, wasn't it? There was that claim that Liverpool had agreed a deal with Amorim, and we spoke to the club they were quite keen to shoot that down and said, look, we haven't decided on a preferred candidate. We're doing our due diligence. We're doing extensive research, which is what they would do anyway, regardless. But the main point is that they hadn't decided on who they wanted yet. Now, going back to what you were saying about the process, we know that when teams appoint new managers, it can be very fraught. There's a lot of conjecture. There's lots of rumours. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about this that makes it slightly unusual is that because Klopp said in January that he's going, it's meant there's been, well, ultimately will be about 4 months of this. Normally you might get 4 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, if one of the managers quits. And if it's in the middle of a season, it tends to be a week, if that. And normally they have them lined up already. So This is completely different. So you this was always going to happen. In terms of, you know, names being thrown around, people getting behind a certain name. Look, Xabi Alonso, they were behind him. The fans wanted him in. He made the decision to stay by Leverkusen, which, as we said in a previous podcast, I just think that's the right choice for him, certainly in the short term and the long term. And looking at this one, I mean, you mentioned again, just saying, part of the process, part of the plan. Part of the process, yeah, because it was never going to be straightforward, as I've just mentioned. There's absolutely no suggestion that it's definitely not going to be him. I think we have to be careful jumping the gun on that. As I say, Liverpool remain insistent, haven't decided on anyone just yet. But there has been a bit of a mood shift in the last week or so. Certainly since Liverpool, you know, said that initially. And you've seen new names like Gary O'Neill of Wolves get mentioned. You've seen names like Arne Slot, I hope I pronounced his name right, of Feyenoord.
Would it be Arne?
Yeah, I think it's Arne, isn't it? Yeah. He's been mentioned. Thomas Tuchel, who obviously followed Klopp at Mainz and Dortmund, so we'd know exactly what to expect. He's also been mentioned. So, and there's even talk of earlier last month actually, wasn't it? De Zerbi, Roberto De Zerbi of Brighton, that again, they'd cooled a little bit on him, but you know, everything points to, why would they do that in terms of Richard Hughes has come in? He was coming in as the sporting director at Liverpool and he wanted him at Bournemouth. Then again, Gary O'Neill worked with Hughes at Bournemouth, has also worked at Liverpool. So this is why these people are being linked.
At Bournemouth.
Well, that's true. That's true, which I think was harsh. But I think you've seen that. Well, also Bournemouth have done quite well this season, but Wolves have also done reasonably well. And if they'd had a few injuries and a few more positive calls from their officials, they're probably a bit higher up the league. But also going back to the people who originally mentioned, Julian Nagelsmann, that was a very tentative link. Well, he's staying with Germany as well. So,
quite fancy Julian Nagelsmann.
So it's all these names that people are looking at, and one by one, they're getting ticked off. But are they getting ticked off? Nagelsmann, I think we can say, yeah. And I think we can say, well, I know you're going to say different on Alonso. I think he will stay at Leverkusen.
I'm going to say different?
Yeah, I thought you were going to end up saying something on the lines of just throw a load of money at him.
I'd love it if they did. I don't necessarily think that is realistic.
You've said the best word there, realistic.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people have to get in mind, is that Liverpool don't know 100% who, not so much who they want, but who they want and who they can get at the moment. And they still don't have to get anyone just yet. And the fact is that this season's ongoing and almost every manager who they might want is still managing a team at the moment and won't want to be overly distracted, and their club won't want to be distracted. So Liverpool have to be careful in terms of approaching people. And there's the fact that any other team who might be looking for a new manager in the summer, you look at Bayern Munich, possibly Barcelona, is they know Liverpool are as well. Definitely. They're the only ones and Bayern Munich as well. They're the only two that are definitely. And so they're kind of all chasing after the same names as well. So everyone's having to be very careful. A lot of politics going on, a lot of machinations behind the scenes, stuff we don't get to see. And on top of this is that Liverpool have imposed this new structure on the club because Michael Edwards has come back as the FSG head of football. Mm-hmm. He's going to be taken over realistically day to day from Mike Gordon. Well, it's actually chief executive of football. He also gets to upload my player ratings every game.
goes into their static computer.
So that's he then says, "We don't want this supercomputer talking in this nonsense." Please do not, and no more supercomputers, thank you. So that's basically it. And I know that sounds like us saying we have no idea what's going on, but the reality is, no one does. In terms of who Liverpool want to appoint, because they haven't decided yet. And it's as simple as that, and there's a way that they have to do it, and this was always going to be a long-winded process. there are certain names who will be favoured, some that might just appear out of nowhere in the next 2 weeks that possibly then become favoured again. As I said before, everyone wanted Alonso, everybody was then invested in Amorim.
Yeah.
And he may well end up being the manager. But we just have to wait and see now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it, Theo, because I think we do all end up going all in on these managers because you favour them. And I think for Liverpool as well, they don't want to be seen to put all their eggs in one basket, because then if it doesn't come off, then it doesn't look like the club's got a good strategy. Perhaps it undermines the other manager that they have to go in for. But there's a lot of names being linked. I'll go through a couple of them again. On slot, Tuchel. There was one man watching a Craven Cottage, so Jose Mourinho. We will have a quick talk about him in a second. But yeah, how do you feel? How do you feel about the whole thing at the moment? Is there anyone that jumps out to you?
No, there isn't. And I think that's saying it all about the process at the moment, that Jurgen Klopp is one of the best managers in world football. The more you can look at him and how he's been this season, and it feels like the right time for him to go. Like, he feels tired, he's running out of energy. It's a long time to be at one place, especially when it's not your home country. It's very hard to then go and choose someone to replace him. Like, the dream replacement would be someone who connects with the fans exactly the same way, doesn't tarnish the legacy, plays the same way as Klopp, but is somehow better. And you can't come to Liverpool and try and be Klopp. So they're not going to get this perfect manager in to replace him. But then who is? Like, there is no standout candidate now in the world of football who ticks every single box. Like, even if Alonso was happy to come, you still look at him going, you've had a great 18 months with Leverkusen, but this is the only 18 months you've got in your senior career. You've never managed in the Champions League. You look at Ruben Amorim, and he's just done it with Sporting. He's had a very good, 4 years with Sporting Lisbon. He did well with Braga as well. But you want them to have that next step before they go to Liverpool. Like, Klopp had that next step. He did really well with Mainz, and then he took Dortmund to a Champions League final. He won a couple of titles with them. There isn't anyone who's at that stage of their career. And it's the point where you're looking at, we don't want someone at the next stage of their journey. We've had Jurgen Klopp for 9 years. We want the next manager who can come in and do it again for another decade, so you've got that consistency. But maybe that's not the right way to look at it. Maybe you do need someone who's a bit more short term to do it for 2-3 years, can just keep it going, like we saw with the sporting director with George Smachter last year. Maybe it's not the worst idea, but still, there are no names quite emerging who leap off the page and go, yep, that is exactly who I want to be the next Liverpool manager.
Did you just say we? Did you mean Liverpool?
In what terms?
In terms of, it doesn't matter, anyway, go on.
Talking collectively.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Looking through some of the names now linked, you know, I started reading a lot more about Amorim after Alonso dropped out the race.
And you were doing the hokey-cokey with him, weren't you?
Yeah.
Amorim, Amaral.
I was the Amorim.
Good grief.
I changed my name to Joe Amorim.
That's better than anything you come up with.
I did read up on him, started to quite like him, and I'm sure I'd do the same with other candidates. It's funny, because like Thomas Tuchel, I would be like massively against Thomas Tuchel.
Why?
But when you go and see what he's done, yeah. I haven't finished, he goes and wins things almost everywhere and does well everywhere. All right, I don't think his personality is the most engaging, and I do slightly worry.
Why do you think that? And the reason I say that is because I was in Singapore last year when Liverpool played Bayern Munich,
yeah.
And he did a press conference in English. Yeah. Despite the fact that all of the people, there was obviously German reporters there, and they did it in English. I'm pretty sure he did almost all the answers in English. And he was very engaging, and he was very open about it all. And I know that's a pre-season tournament, and that's when managers tend to be, you know, they won't say let the guard down, but it's certainly not up, let's put it that way. But he came across really well, I thought, anyway. And that's from somebody who goes and sees these managers all the time. So I was impressed with him. And I've been impressed with him when Liverpool, you know, played Chelsea. Yeah. You know, he was very gracious in the defeats of both finals in 2022. So, and of course he was the manager of Dortmund when Liverpool beat them 4-3, and he was the manager of PSG when Liverpool beat them 3-2. Yeah, yeah. So both times he has I think partly it's due down to his appearance. I think a little bit as well. I think.
What do you mean? You're saying I'm an appearancist?
Yeah. Well, not you, but just people in general. So I do think that I wouldn't have a problem with him.
I don't really know what you get out of his appearance. I think he's a perfectly handsome, good-looking man.
I'm just saying, some people have said that.
I think there's a dourness about him that I think sometimes, but I look at Tuchel and think maybe it's the jobs he's taken. Chelsea. I mean, it's not a great place to work, is it, Chelsea?
Well, what does that tell you? It either tells you one or two things. It tells you he's quite happy to take on a challenge, or he's quite happy to take the money.
Yeah, now, well, that's the worry.
PSG, I do think that you might say that, but he's gone on to Bayern Munich as well.
Yeah.
These aren't easy jobs.
He's been in charge of good teams, but how many of them do you look back and go, yes, he was a real success? Like, Chelsea fans still like him. He won the Champions League, and that's more the ownership before they got rid of him.
Funny enough, though, if you won the Champions League with Liverpool, you know, it doesn't... Like, look at Benitez. Benitez had really good seasons. He had bad seasons. But he'd be remembered as a heroic figure because he won the Champions League. If Tuchel came in and 3 years at Liverpool, won a Champions League, and even if he had, finished seventh in one of those years, finished fourth in the other and finished second in the other, he'd still be thought of favourably, wouldn't he? Mm-hmm. So I do think he's an interesting person. And look, you know, Bayern haven't really picked up as much as I think they'd wanted under him. But I think he's someone that people shouldn't completely discount. I don't know too much about Arne Slot, but then you could probably say his CV would be similar to the likes of an Amorim, wouldn't it?
No, Feyenoord have just won the cup and they won the league last year.
But yeah, I mean, the Alonso thing I was going to say, my slight worry sometimes with Liverpool is, as a club, they try to do things the right way. They try to do things the patient way. They don't speak publicly a lot about things. They don't, you know, you look at the way Bayern are conducting their manager search. It's a very public process, isn't it? Maybe that's just the nature of the way German clubs are. But it's certainly a lot more in your face, a lot more forceful than I'd say Liverpool's is. And I just hope, and I could be completely wrong, but they've been forceful enough with Alonso, in the sense that they've really got a sense of where he wants to be. You know, because there's one thing about saying, would you be interested in managing here, and him saying, no, I'd like to stay. And the alternative to that is going, come and manage here, we'll give you this, this and this, we'll make it the absolute, you know, we'll fulfil your ambitions. And I hope that they've been forceful enough with him.
Well, don't forget, with Alonso, though, there was Bayern Munich as well, so he's turned them down as well.
Yeah,
so there's two clubs. It's not just a Liverpool thing, it's a him thing. And I said this on the pod earlier, said it on previous pods, in his long-term and short-term future, I think him staying at Bayer Leverkusen will serve him well.
I don't disagree, but I think he would have served Liverpool well.
It's difficult for Alonso, because I've said on podcasts before, it would have been hard for him to choose between Liverpool and Bayern, because he's upsetting one fan base there.
Yeah.
With Leverkusen, he keeps everyone happy, and he can do what's best for him in terms of, he does another year there, another 2 years there. You'd imagine his CV is just going to look more impressive. It's a gamble if it doesn't. But then it's still that situation of, if it backfires, he's on a downer. And where do you go next with it? Like, you're not going to have a better season than what he's done this year with Leverkusen. I know we've had this discussion, and you said, well, he's going to the Champions League. He could win the Champions League. He's not, is he? The Champions League next year is going to favour the big teams even more because of that new structure.
I'm just saying.
And you would expect, by Leverkusen, some of those players will, you know, it always happens. Some of those players will get poached. It's just the nature of the way football works, you know. Unfortunately, clubs like Bayer Leverkusen don't.
But hang on, all of this is irrelevant because Alonso is not coming to
Liverpool
this year.
No, I know. But anyway, that was just the argument.
What I'd say is interesting with it, as though, is he's made that decision to stay in the season when they're on the verge of going for the league title. Everyone's buying in. Now, we've seen Klopp sign a new contract when Liverpool going for the quadruple in that terms, and he's got caught up in the emotion. Maybe there is a chance where the season's over, you can look at it in a bit more cold hearted and go, actually, the situation's changed slightly. But then at that point, when you're in end of the season, May, June, you'd like to think Liverpool already got someone in. They've already made that decision.
I think Liverpool, the problem there is Liverpool couldn't wait for him and he couldn't wait for Liverpool. They had to get on with it.
Neither could Bayern, so.
I'm going to talk dirty to you both for just a moment.
Go on.
And just a little disclaimer before this section of the pod.
I know where this is going.
I'm not saying what I'm about to say in all seriousness, but there's part of me, maybe in an alternative reality, that would love to see the man watching at Craven Cottage just for a year, just to scratch that itch. Jose Mourinho.
Oh.
Jose Mourinho. And just what would happen? What would happen with Jose Mourinho at Liverpool? Someone humour me.
I don't think it's as ridiculous an idea as it would have seemed 48 hours ago. Even... Even 2 hours ago, when Amorim was still in the hunt. Because, as we're saying, it's so hard to choose that dream replacement for Jurgen Klopp, and you want someone who's going to buy into everything the club, click with the fans, be there for a decade. Maybe that isn't what Liverpool need now. Maybe they need that short-term fix until Alonso's got 2-3 more years under his belt, or Amorim's got that. And with Mourinho, yes, it's blown up in his face at a number of clubs, but he's also got fans and players on his side very quickly, and he's won a lot of trophies. He's always been a success, apart from at Tottenham. And even then, he was, what, a week away from a final appearance before they sacked him. He could have won them a trophy. Like, he's done well at Roma. It's just because he's so outspoken. He seems to fall out with everyone on his way out.
Can't imagine him working well with Michael Edwards, can you? No. Jose Mourinho going.
Can you imagine, Michael Edwards telling Mourinho what to do, he's not happy with that.
This interview he's done with The Telegraph, he seems to think he works best as a head coach, where you just give him the players and let him manage and get on with that side of things, and you do the rest off it. And he's happy, and he's a bit more relaxed.
Yeah, because he can then blame them for getting the wrong players, that's why. Yeah, he's not soft.
That was definitely a charm offensive from Mourinho, wasn't it? I did like that he kind of said, but he kind of said to me that me and Benitez went and won, you know, the Champions League, the leagues in La Liga and in Portugal. But nowadays you can get a job and he said, we got jobs in the Premier League. Nowadays you can get a job if you play out from the back with your goalkeeper doing back heels. So he obviously isn't happy with the younger crop being linked to these big jobs.
It's worked out really well for him, hasn't it? Like the stuff coming out today, having been at Craven Cottage yesterday, and you could say, well, he lives local, doesn't he? It's like his home in London's right outside Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
He has watched other games, but it's still quite timely.
I think with Mourinho, it's like drinking too much. You know that you could have a wild night out. It could be great fun, but also you could regret it massively and make an idiot of yourself. And
that's a little insight into your life, then.
There you go. Should we talk about the game? Dolly, was it? Did it go slightly more straightforward and more to plan than you expected? I know Fulham got their goal, but Liverpool seemed to play out the second half slightly untroubled. And
it was only on the way. It was only on the way home that I kind of realised that. Did Fulham even have a shot in the second half? I mean, they must have had something. They certainly had a couple of crosses that kind of went across goal or...
And that's the last thing I remember you saying before I started snoring away.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm sure that they didn't really do much. But yeah, Liverpool started the game, as in Atalanta, started it quite well, got ahead. And then, unfortunately, and spoke to Andy Robertson after the game, and he said that... That basically they took a step back with about 10 minutes to go before half time, and that's when they started giving the ball away a bit, and that's when Fulham got their goal. But what was interesting, and I think Danny Murphy said this last night, or as I read it this morning, he said the difference was that Fulham's goal didn't mean Liverpool, in a sense, Fulham's goal didn't put Liverpool behind, so there was no panic in Liverpool's game, right? And that is the massive difference with scoring first. So even if the other team scores, you know, well, we're still level. We can just go back to what we were doing or rectify the mistakes we got. They're not chasing the game.
Yeah.
And the second half, they came out, and the first 5 minutes, they were... You could tell straight away, I thought Endo was very, very good in the second half. I thought he'd done okay in the first half, but he was the one that started to lose the ball a little bit, and it was a little bit off the pace. But second half, he stepped it up. He was getting in there, he was being decisive, he was moving the ball quickly. That allowed everybody else to push forward. The whole team collectively took a few steps forward, and... they got the goal through Gravenberch, which, while it was a mistake by Iwobi, it was just constant pressure from Liverpool, which is the kind of thing that they need.
Yeah.
And the third goal was actually a very good goal, very, very well worked, and that was a good example of Liverpool taking advantage of Fulham finally having to, not so much commit players forward, but they knew they had to start doing something because they were getting to the latter stage of the game, the last quarter. And once it goes to 3-1, and interestingly, it's Diogo Jota making it 3-1, and the amount of times he scores, not only the first goal but the goal that kind of kills the game.
Neil Jones is becoming another meme.
He's got the meme game down, I mean, they could have done mine, but you know, he's
setting the house on fire.
Yeah. But Jota is the good for him, and also good for Trent. The pair of them had obviously come back from injury, and to both get the goal was a little bit of a reminder of what Liverpool have missed, even though during that stage of the season, for the most part, they did okay in terms of getting the results. It was only in the last couple of weeks when they weren't there, such as United, the two United games. Jota plays in that, and they probably win both of them. You know, fully fit Jota, that is.
Yeah.
And Trent probably would have made a difference to them as well. So, overall, I think the performance, second half particularly, was good. First half was fine. And to win 3-1 away in a Premier League, no matter who you're playing against, is a great result. So, and but given what had gone on before in the league for Liverpool, and the situation with Arsenal and Manchester City at the top, it was a very important win. And, of course, the second of four away games in a row, and they've already won the first two.
Yeah, it was a very important win. Some very important performances in there, Theo. We'll start with Ryan Gravenberch, who sort of wasn't brilliant in the first half, but took his goal ever so well, you know, so well that Van Dijk was celebrating before he'd even received the ball, never mind lined up the shot. And just gave a reminder of perhaps what he can do. It's not been the easiest season for him, but certainly seeds of hope with Gravenberch that he could go on and fulfil his potential, isn't there?
Well, he's still only 21, isn't he? He's still such a young boy, and you think that he's not played consistently for 2-3 years now. He's been in two different countries. This is the first time without the winter break. There are a lot of mitigating circumstances there for why it's not worked out for him the last couple of years. But he's still got a hell of a lot of experience. He's still won trophies, and he's taking steps in the right direction. Like, he's a YouTube player at the moment, isn't he? You could put a great compilation together of his best bits from games, but there are moments where he's sloppy, he's losing the ball.
Yeah.
But he got better and better against Fulham. Like, there was that one turn he did in the first half where I think we joked, oh, that's his highlight of the game. And then he just stepped up after the second half. So he gets his goal. It's really well taken. He's just so composed to bend it in that top corner. But then he plays a big role in the third goal as well, and he just seems a lot more confident. It's amazing how much a goal can make that difference to a player. Eyebrows are obviously going to be raised at him being in that starting 11, the same as, say, Harvey Elliott, for example, even Jarrell Kwanzaa, and you needed those players to step up and make an impact. But it's telling that he is one of those players that he's had injuries, but he's come back a few weeks ago now. He's had time on training pitch and a few minutes here and there to get up to speed a little bit. And then he gets the start and he makes a difference. Like, we've seen that from Robertson in recent weeks. We've seen that from Gakpo in recent weeks. And starting to see it from Trent. Maybe Salah Szoboszlai can do it when they ease back in. But yeah, he's certainly shown glimpses of talent time and time again this year. And it's a landmark moment for him getting that first Premier League goal. Whoever the new Liverpool manager is, they've got an exciting player there. It's just, when he gets older, you'll see it a bit more consistently.
I wrote something on Gravenberch before the game, actually, on Saturday, which was in reaction to that. The reports from Turkey that Besiktas, was it? Were interested in signing him, which was of a wider piece basically saying, again, going back to the manager, that the longer they don't appoint somebody, everybody's going to get lit with the move away because that's just the way football works. But pointing out that before his injury in the Cup final, the League Cup final, I think he'd only missed either four, he missed as in not appeared in either four or five games, and for all bar two of them, he'd been injured. So I think it was, he'd missed five games, three of them was injured, so only two he'd failed to get off the bench. But since he's come back, he'd played a minute against Brighton, he'd started against Sheffield United, and in the last four games since then, which were the two Atlanta games, Man United in the league and Crystal Palace in the league, he hadn't got off the bench. So it was kind of like, you know, okay, Curtis Jones is back, Szoboszlai's back, Elliot is pushed into midfield now with the other forwards being back, there was a bit less room for him to play. But it was a bit of a surprise that he started against Fulham. But he had played against Fulham in the League Cup in January, and he'd done reasonably well, actually. And just before he'd actually got that injury against Chelsea, he'd actually come into, with one exception, I think he'd come into a bit of form. So
yeah, I thought so too.
I think that was bad timing for him, that injury. And I think it's this time he hasn't had to come straight back into the team, really. And I think that's benefited him. Although, in the first half, he wasn't particularly brilliant, but, you know, games last 90 minutes or 97, 98, whatever, and come to, you know, by the time he gets substituted, didn't he? By the time he gets substituted, I think he's played 90 minutes once for Liverpool. By the time he gets substituted,
is that Norwich?
In the FA Cup, he's got his goal. He's playing a lot better, and he plays a part in that third goal. So, you know, with a little turn as well,
That was the turning point for Liverpool, partly in the game, that the midfield wasn't at its best in the first half. Like, Liverpool were being forced back a lot. They were passing it a lot around the defence, relying on Trent to get it upfield or getting to Diaz and Gakpo to do bits in that third, and they get bypassed in the midfield a little bit. But in the second half, they took control of that game. As Doyle said, Endo was a lot better, Gravenberch was a lot better, and Elliot, he put in a good all-round performance as well. Not everything came off for him, but he was deserving of that 90 minutes. He was deserving of his assist. I'm lucky not to get a goal. And for a three that's probably not played together before, certainly not in the Premier League, it was a real encouraging showing.
Yeah, I thought Elliot in particular, that was kind of...
It was his kind of game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's busy, isn't he?
Quite
effective. And he links players, and it was no surprise that it should have been him that cuts out the Iwobi pass.
Yeah, it doesn't give the ball away much, always sort of relieves the pressure on you a lot. I thought he played very well, Elliot. So much so that I think when we come to picking our teams, I think he should be in the conversation. Another player who played very well, Cody Gakpo. Yeah, it just feels like last couple of games he's started to regain a bit of confidence. That's
well, you've seen that for, as you say, the last three or four games. He was very good. What I quite like about him now is that he doesn't, when he has a bad game and he has a bad time, he always looks hesitant.
Yeah.
And when he's hesitant, that means that he's not instantly looking to push forward and he doesn't use his strength, because he's actually quite a tall lad and he's quite strong with it as well. And you saw that against Fulham. He was quite happy knocking players off and going inside. And he's very hard to knock off the ball once he starts, gets up a bit of head of steam. That happened quite a few times, but just his overall game, he was the one in the first half who looked a bit more. I know Diaz started quite well up against Anthony Robinson, but yeah. Gakpo was the one who was looking a little bit lively. I think he had the shot, didn't he, that
tipped over, that
was a decent shot. And in the second half, the amount of times that, because it was on our wing where we were sat, he was getting inside, just playing 1-2, whether it's Robertson or Gravenberch or Jota was coming a little bit wider to make the passes. And of course, it was his ball through to Jota to get that goal. And he used his ball through to Diaz, wasn't it, that was handled, and it was his ball through to Salah that he should have scored against Atlanta. I'm on about those two last ones. So
he won the first free kick as well, which in part leads to the goal.
Yeah, yeah. So he's become, as last season, which I think people forget, in the running, he became a member of that forward line. Admittedly, it was down the middle rather than on the left.
Yeah.
And it looks as though he's going to do so again, because it's difficult to leave him out on that kind of form. And while I'm pretty sure now in saying that both, I think he's still made, has he made the most appearances for Liverpool this season? It's either him or Nunes, the most appearances, not made, played the most minutes, but made the most appearances, is that he's still got that freshness that perhaps some of the other players haven't got.
Yeah.
Well, Klopp said post-match that it's really telling, and you can make a massive difference, that Cody Gakpo is back. He's not been injured for a good few weeks now. He's been back for a while, but we were looking at a player that wasn't at his best. He was looking low on confidence, and he wasn't really doing much when he was in midfield. He was quiet when he was up front, and it's perhaps had to go back to basics of go on the left wing, go and show us what you can do in your favourite position, and we're seeing the benefit from that now. I mean, he's another player, like I mentioned earlier with Robertson, that because they've taken their time to get back up to speed, now they're in the side, they're stepping up and setting that example for the players that are only just coming back now or have been tired from overplaying. It'll just be interesting to see what they do with him positionally going forward, because he's not as prolific as a Jota. He's not quite as effective down the middle as Nunes when Nunes is at his best, but you'd still probably go Diaz over him on the left wing.
Yeah.
But he still makes such a difference in that third, and he is, as Doyle said, so strong when he's at his best, running with the ball, and he can pick a pass as well, which is very hard to stop.
Feels like for both him and Nunes, every time that they sort of struggle a little bit, you get them on the left, get them more involved in the game, and then that sort of gets them some confidence back, and then they can try him again up front. I thought another player had a good game quietly. It was Gerard Quansah, who obviously Ibrahima Konate had.
We've had his struggles. Disagreements over Konate playing and Quansah, haven't we?
Don't necessarily think it was. I don't know. Maybe it was me. I remember you and Dorsey sort of disagreeing on him, but
maybe that's,
I really like Quansah. I think
he's literally made one mistake all season. Admittedly, it was a very big one and a big game.
But you struggle. And we'll pick our teams in a bit for the derby. But you struggle to ever feel reasons to leave him out. I just think he's, every time I see him play, it seems pretty seamless.
And he's been fit all season as well. And I think that's the problem that Canati's got. Because Canati picks up hamstring injuries, it appears, quite readily. And it takes him a little bit of time to get over them. But obviously, with so many games coming up, there's going to be rotation. And we'll get onto our teams in a bit. But no one will be perturbed in the slightest if Quansah starts at Goodison.
And this was his first appearance since that United mistake, wasn't it? So the fact that he wasn't fazed by it, there were no mistakes there. He's unfortunate that the Fulham goal comes from him doing well to block a shot and it just land into Castagne. But he saw so much of the ball and he was passing it around well.
100% possession.
Yeah, you put that early on. But he wasn't ever at risk of giving it away from that, like this mistake he made against United. He certainly learnt from that. He's got a bit of everything, doesn't he? He's good on the ball. He can pass it out from the back. He's quick.
Yeah.
There was one moment where I think Fulham in the first half, they were looking to get in behind Trent and he just appeared from nowhere to intercept it and then starts another attack. I think it was a bit of a surprise that Konate had started, was it, three or four games in a row after that United one? Because normally you only see him play once or twice and then he's rotated because of that injury record. And that's why it's no surprise that Quansah came in for this one. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see who is going to get the nod for the derby game, because he has very rarely put a foot wrong apart from United since he has got into that team.
Let's dead quickly then move on to the derby.
Form book apparently goes out the window, except it never does. Yeah. It never does.
Also, I mean, Liverpool coming up against a team that the Premier League clearly favours, gives all the decisions to, you know, Nottingham Forest.
That is just a disclaimer.
That is sarcasm. I'm sorry. Please don't send me lots of emails.
Send him lots of emails at joe.rimmer at reachplc.com. Address them to Joseph.
Sorry, wrong Joe. I'm joe.thomas. how are we both feeling ahead of this derby?
Tired.
Confident.
I'm confident that I'm tired.
Yeah, yeah. Are you confident in Liverpool's ability to win this derby? It's a tough game, obviously. Any time they go to Goodison is tough. I think even when Liverpool have had very good seasons, Goodison has made it hard. I know that they won a game there a few years ago 4-1, but that is not the norm.
They've got the players to win. And I think we've seen with the performance, to a certain extent at Atalanta, and certainly at Fulham, that they can win it. The only problem they've got is that Everton will not want to play against them. And that's what Everton want. Yeah. Everton will love Liverpool just to have the ball for long amount of time. They'll just make it narrow. They'll say, cross into our box because we can just head it away all day long. And this is one thing Liverpool don't really do that much. It's put crossing the box in that respect. Although they do have the players if they do fancy doing it a bit later on. But that's what Everton wants. Then they'll look to play on the counter, win some free kicks, win some corners. And even when Liverpool have won the derbies at Anfield, I think there was one where, was it last year where they were Everton at the post for the corner and Liverpool legged it down the other end and scored. Yeah. This year, Liverpool needed a penalty in the second half.
And it was a counter off a corner as well for the second, wasn't it?
Yeah. So there is that kind of, was there another game where it was it last season where it was 2-0?
It was the 2-0 when Robertson scored. That was 2020.
That was Origi.
That was the last Origi one.
That was Origi as well, wasn't it? Yeah. The point being, all of those games are very hard, and all of those games were at Anfield. Turn around at Goodison. It was 0-0 last season. It was terrible that game. I think the midfield was Carvalho, Elliot, and Fabinho. Firmino, I think was it? Yeah, it was like crazy midfield.
That was the weird part of the season, though, where there was just no football because of, was it the Queen, and then was it train strikes or something? So there was no rhythm there. Liverpool only just got Jota back from injury. I think Nunes had just come back
from injury. Nunes nearly scored, they were the ridiculous efforts. And Neil Maupay missed the sitter for Everton, so he needs to remember that. But yeah, most of them tend to be draws. The interesting thing now is, with Everton having won, it's a bigger game for Liverpool than it is for Everton now, right? Yeah. Mm. And I think I actually think that might play into Liverpool's hands, because I think Everton, they're not going to go free-flowing football, are they? Because they just can't do that. And if they do that, that'll suit Liverpool. I just think the intent is more there for Liverpool. And while Everton, obviously I've covered Everton for 18 years, so I know exactly what they'd be thinking. They'll be very keen to stop Liverpool from winning the league. I do think that Liverpool's greater need for a result will reflect in their intensity and urgency, not so much on the desperation, as it were. I can't see them being desperate going into this game.
Yeah, I think, I was trying to work out whether the results of the weekend was good or bad for Liverpool.
I still can't work out.
Yeah, neither can I, but I still think that, like Doyle, it's slightly better for them, because a really desperate Goodison Park might have been a really, really hostile and difficult place. I just think it takes the pressure off Everton a bit, and almost Liverpool a little bit, because yeah, I think if you speak to a lot of Everton fans, especially in this season, there seems to be a bit of a resigned, we're not very good, not in those terms, but they're saying we're not very good and we'll get beat here. And you hear a lot of them, and I just feel like they might look at this game and go, well, we won the tough one. We got Luton again in a couple of weeks. I can't remember who they got the weekend, but
Brentford at home.
Brentford. So they're looking at those three games going, if we win those ones, we're safe. The derby, it doesn't really matter. It's a bit of a free hit. And I think that might be better for Liverpool than it is Everton. And having watched a lot of Everton this season, yeah, they can dig in. They'll make it ugly. It won't be the type of game that Liverpool will love. But also, just watching Sean Dyche's teams, they don't show a lot in attack. Even at the weekend.
They'll get their opportunities, though.
They will. But even at the weekend, the couple of goals they scored, Dwight McNeil scores from range. Idrissa Gueye has his first shot in 100. You know, and before that they scored a goal just like Liverpool, and Nunes with the goalkeeper hit it straight at Calvert-Lewin. They don't score a lot of great team goals. So you know, if Liverpool can control it, I think they can get what they need out of it. And
if Liverpool score first, that might just be the end of the game.
Yeah.
This is a game where Liverpool can't really afford to be conceding first, because then that gives Everton something to defend.
Absolutely.
Well, this week, we've got all these away games in a row, but Everton have got those three home games in a row. And when Brentford are down there with them and Forest were as well, Liverpool was always the write-off for them. If they could get 4 points from this week, they're happy. And they've already got three there against the team that was below them. So Brentford's not quite as much riding on it now. Brentford got a big win on Saturday, didn't they? So you'd say they're safe. So for them, it's not a case of we need these points to stay up. It'd be great to dent Liverpool's title charge.
Yeah, there comes more of that, doesn't it?
And with Everton as well. If they'd had a bad result against Forest, yes, the pressure's on them. But there's also that possibility that the fans turn on them rather than turning on Liverpool. So it could be a good atmosphere where they can not enjoy it, but create that toxicity that Liverpool sometimes struggle in the derby. We'll see.
Yeah.
So going back to the form being out the window, both the teams come into the game with a win.
Yeah.
So no matter who wins,
how can it
be regarded as like out of form? You know what I mean?
Let's pick our teams for it, because I think we could get some interesting selections. Obviously, I think we'll have a clean sweep on Alisson goal, but come on, Doyle, you start us off on your defense.
Trent, Van Dijk, I'm going to stick with Kwanzaa, and I'm going to have Robertson at left back.
Deal.
I'd do Konate in for Kwanzaa, just what I expect him to do.
I expect him to do Konate. I, like Doyle, would stick with Kwanzaa with this one. You know, especially think a lot of aerial, and obviously Konate is good in the air, but I think Kwanzaa has shown that he's very good in the air. There'll be a lot of aerial stuff, and also if you're going to make a change for the weekend,
this is very cruel on Joe Gomez, isn't it? Who's like playing
all great
the games.
Season.
Yeah, that would never be.
If he wants to make a change at fullback, Gomez will obviously come in, won't he?
Yeah, right back. But I can't see.
But it could be either side.
Okay. I think Trent has to play.
I think Robertson has to play. Robertson's good second half.
So yeah, agreed on defences. Matteo gives you midfield.
Endo keeps his place. McAllister comes back in, but it's that third slot you can't quite decide on. I don't think Gravenberch will keep his place. I know it's a bit harsh, he's got his goal. So then it comes down to Jones, Elliot or Szoboszlai. I think Szoboszlai's still not looking right. I'll lean towards Jones, but then it depends how his condition is coming back from injury still. I know he had a few games in a row and Elliot's just done well, but it still seems more a Curtis Jones sort of game. Get on the ball, keep possession, kill it when you need to, and then you've got Elliot to make an impact off the bench if you need it, Szoboszlai to make an impact off the bench if you need it.
Bloody.
Endo or McAllister,
yeah.
I'm stuck on this third one, either Elliot or Jones. What do you think?
I'd do Elliot. I think there are going to be times when Liverpool want to take the pressure off. I think if Liverpool can keep possession a lot, they can sort of keep the pressure on Everton. And I just think Elliot,
the core is all arms and legs for Everton, isn't he? So who's going to be the one that deals with him? You've got three short ones in there, and I think
but Endo's good in the air, isn't he? He's robust.
I think Curtis might offer a bit more physical presence than Elliot, but then if he's going to play, then I'd have to play him on the right of the midfield three, because McAllister's better on the left.
Yeah, but that's where I would play it, McAllister.
He's been doing McAllister on the right a lot recently, hasn't he? With Szoboszlai on the left,
has he? I've been to these games.
Szoboszlai is just, his form's just gone out the window. Almost feel like Szoboszlai needs to get to the end of the season.
Season and just start again,
I mean, I actually think a very, very overlooked narrative over the last couple of months is how poor he's been, and he's very lucky, not very lucky, but it's good that he had a good start, because we would be worried about him.
You were right to be worried about navigators, though.
I'm not that worried. Front line, Theo?
This is hard as well, because the front three that started did so well, and you'd say, well, you stick with form, because the two that dropped out, stayed out, haven't been playing well. But can you ever leave Salah out when you've just benched him for one? I imagine Salah comes back in. Gakpo probably keeps his place. Diaz, I think he's only missed one game, not started one game since the international break, so I wouldn't be surprised if this is his turn to sit out one.
Yeah.
And then maybe Nunes comes in for Jota, just because Jota's still feeling his way back after injury.
Yeah, I think, when we do this, it's like, what will he do and what will we do?
Yeah.
Well, I think he will not play Jota, because like you say, I think he's feeling his way back. He always plays Diaz, but like, you made a compelling case that perhaps he could drop out, but I would personally do... I would keep Gakpo in. I think he should do. I think he's earned it off the left. I would put Salah back in on the right. I'd probably keep Jota in, especially because he's done well at Goodison in the past, hasn't he? And I don't know whether Nunes, he could get to him a little bit. Yeah, that's my front
row. Oh, he gets the Everton fans up and wins the game.
And again, I like Nunes. If you're bringing him off the bench, you've got a chance, haven't you?
I agree 100% with what you just said.
Yeah, good. That's nice. I think we agree on the whole team together.
Oh, yeah. Weird, man.
Yeah. Right.
What have you put in our brew?
Yeah. Give us a prediction, then. Theo?
Surely they're going to get a clean sheet at some point in the Premier League. Let's go 2-0.
2-0?
Everton will definitely score because it's Everton. 2-1. To Liverpool, that is.
I think Liverpool win 3-1. And I've got this horrible, horrible feeling that I'm far too confident about this derby.
But then that's what you ask Everton fans now in here and in the office, and for age they'd be like, oh, I'll just be typical us to get a draw or get a win. And I think they're kind of expecting it as well, and I think that might backfire a little bit.
We'll see.
Never go into a derby expecting a win ever.
So we've all just predicted 3 wins.
Yeah.
We're not expecting it. We're saying that's what we don't go into going, yay. It's like, you don't go into like even playing Sheffield United at home expecting to win. Well, like maybe you do there,
but. Yeah. But it's the Old Trafford thing, isn't it? You know, I go back to Old Trafford and think you should never go to Old Trafford going, we will walk this, which is what I think people fell in the trap.
People just, have they never seen any football before?
The difference with that is United, they are very jammy. They manage to get the results, don't they, when they need to, and they can just sit deep, keep the sides out and hit them on the counter.
Well, that's exactly what Everton are going to do.
Yeah. But Everton aren't successful at it.
But that's why they're staying up, aren't they?
But that's why the wins at Goodison are so good, though, because it isn't... I know Liverpool's record against Everton is very good, but you don't win derbies in a big fashion very often, especially away from home. Perhaps you do so at home, but away from home.
That's why 4-1 was so unusual. Yeah.
So there you go.
We'll picking our Nord Person of the Day.
Thank you for reminding me. Person of the Week, association with Nord, our sponsor. Link
ever
in
since there. You brought this in, it's when Liverpool's title challenge took a little bit of a dent.
I keep on nominating myself and you never give it to me.
you're not having it.
Sorry if we had McAllister's won it twice, he won the third one.
We haven't done it yet.
We haven't done it.
I thought you did a third one on Friday.
It's Monday. No, it's Monday. It's every Monday. Mondays.
So go on, give us yours, Theo. Three. We'll have to give it three votes. Two out of three.
I've got to remember who did one in that answer, hasn't there?
No dead space. Gakpo. Give us yours. Gakpo.
Yeah, I can go along with Gakpo.
Congratulations to Cody Gakpo. Huge, huge. Well, this is just topped his week off.
Exactly, yeah.
You are our Nord VPN Person of the Week. Well done, Cody Gakpo. Ian Doyle, if I'd like to find you, where will I find you?
When?
playing the guitar.
Bass guitar. Social media on Twitter, as it is called Twitter, and I will be calling it Twitter. It's at Ian Doyle Sport, or on other bits, at Ian_Doyle_Sport. Because
that really frustrates me.
When I signed up, I logged in wrong and I can't get it changed.
Yeah, every time I have to tag you, I have to go in on Threads and change it.
I just wanted to change it, they
won't. You're the only two people still using Threads anyway. But go on.
You should see my followers. I think both of us, they just keep climbing.
I've got 12,000 now.
Well, fair enough.
10,000. Across the board.
Across the board.
Facebook, Twitter.
What about you, Joe?
At JoeRimmer88.
What does the 88 stand for?
1988, a wonderful year for humanity.
Liverpool were very good that year.
Yeah, they were, yeah. I went down after that. Did something happen?
No wonder my dad was excited. Right.
Thank you for
some
that. Information. Thank you for that information. What year were you conceived, Theo?
I don't know, because I was a month premature and I'm born in August, so it could
be
either side.
You had to be awkward, didn't you?
Yeah.
Mine was the summer of 1975, so there you go.
This feels like that should be a song.
Summer of 75, yeah. If you enjoy learning where we're conceived and want to give us...
When, not where.
I can't tell you.
Could you actually tell us where?
No.
I think I could, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I think I'm a birthday baby.
Really? I think I'm a holiday baby.
I'm due and born, so... Yeah, it might be a holiday, babe. No,
couldn't be. You're more awesome of a baby. It's gone a bit cold, maybe.
Right.
Can I just say we've used the word baby an awful lot there?
Yeah. If you enjoyed this segment, please go on to YouTube. Give us a follow there, Blood Red.
Press the bell.
Give us a like on on social media. We've got a blood red group actually on Facebook that I probably should talk about a bit more, which you can join. I have to admit you, but if you go on there and apply to join, you can join. It's a small community. We're on Apple Podcasts. Please give us some stars. Give us 5 if you like us that much. Give us 4 if you like us slightly less. If you want to give us anything else, don't. Just listen to a different podcast.
Can I comment as well and tell us where they were conceived?
You can comment.
My own tag on Spotify.
Have you?
If I look underneath, it says me and Ghosty.
Yeah, there you go.
I have absolutely no idea what that means, but...
You're an artist.
Have you called that in the past?
Does it match up with your bass guitar stuff?
That's interesting. I might try that. Should we ever record our own stuff?
Yeah.
Which we may do.
Follow Ian Doyle on Spotify and you can listen to pods or listen to bass music, so whatever you want.
Which member of our team was on Spotify?
He's still there.
Is he?
Sean Bradbury.
Sean Bradbury?
Submariner. Submariner.
Congratulations to Sean Bradbury, we should say, because little Ronan Bradbury was born...
another baby.
A few weeks ago, and
this is the very childlike pod.
Yeah. Right, we will leave it there and come back to you on Friday to discuss the Merseyside derby. And look ahead to the West Ham game. And any new manager developments, it's going to be another interesting week. See you then. Ta-ra.